ॐ शांति। I don't need to make efforts to be a soul. I am already a soul. When I just think the word Baba, and all of those lovely associations connected with all previous meditations come, and I am immediately in Baba's subtle presence. Soul and God through the subtle means no one else, nothing else. So I start a heart-to-heart conversation Baba, you said today in the Moli, we have to remember the incorporeal Father. That means I have to become incorporeal also, bodiless. So very openly and with a lot of love, Baba, you tell me what I need to practice more to be easily bodiless. Is it a lack of truth, or is it a lack of purity? Lack of lightness, maybe. What do I need to practice more? Allow Baba to show you what you need to practice more of. Soul and Baba in a subtle state. opening my heart and I'm allowing Baba to show me what I need to practice more so that as an incorporeal soul I can easily connect with the incorporeal Father. Baba, show me which original quality of the soul I need to practice more. I need to be more. Connection is very strong. The line is very clear. And I'm allowing Baba to show me what I need to be more. Let's say that I need to be the embodiment of purity more. So Shiv Baba takes me to the incorporeal world and I become just the embodiment of purity. The thoughts become less. The experience becomes more. And I remain just a tiny star radiating purity. No thoughts, just experience. Thank you.
Om Shanti. Just a couple of words before Ken starts the class. I can't say welcome because he's been here many years before us. So Ken, if you don't know, is one of our oldest Western brothers, and is going to share today on 18 ways or many ways to listen to the Murli. And one of Baba's blessings to Ken that he mentioned the other day was of love for knowledge. So Ken's leaving today, but has is sharing this time and opportunity with us to appreciate the Murlis. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. So, who remembers today's Murli? Huh? Hand up. Who can remember at least one point? Wow. Not many. Who can't remember anything from the Murli? Oh dear. Did you come to the Murli? One of the recurring themes in the last couple of weeks was how study is a source of income. And Baba always compares the way that, in fact, he doesn't give much credit for the fathers or the gurus, but he gives a lot of credit for the teachers, because at least they can earn their livelihood with what they study in the Laukik world. And in the same way, our sense of wealth and therefore well-being comes from understanding and studying the knowledge that Baba gives us. And now the knowledge is our source not only of income, but it's our source of everything we are. It's the first way, yeah. It's the door to the other things, isn't it? So, the sequence is Gyan, Yoga, Dana, Seva, right? So it means we have to understand something and then become what we understand. Practice what we understand with yoga and become it. And dharana, and on the basis of what we become, we serve. Baba many times has said that what does service or what gets service done is our stage, nothing else. If you're trying to do everything else but you don't have a good stage, you're probably just whipping water to make butter. You know, it's an expression Baba used once. You're just beating and beating and beating. You don't have the cream. You're trying to make butter out of water. You know, do it. So, if you ask people what is the importance of study, even in the Laukik world, they'll say, well, no study, no success in life, right? If you don't study, you're probably condemning yourself, generally, not always. But if you don't have a good study, you're probably condemning yourself to a fairly ordinary job. And these days, in the world, they give a lot of attention to qualifications. Even if you have finished, say, a university degree, they want master's degrees, then they want post-graduation courses of all sorts so that you can, you know, be a specialist in a very small bit of reality. And they probably say that, well, study is also good for keeping yourself disciplined. You know, if you don't have a regular in the Lockheed world, and there is a parallel between that source of income and this source of income. If you are not disciplined in your study, you probably won't get through. And that's the other reason why people study, is to pass their exams. And also maybe a bit of time management to help us organize our time better. In the same way, we also have to pass our exams. The problem is the exams every day, right? We have exams every single... And if we're really attentive, we have an exam every second. You know, and then we have a final exam, right? People study so much to pass their finals, whatever they are, in whatever country. And our final exam, we already know the question beforehand, don't we? The final question will be, how detached are you really? Yeah? How can you just leave everything in 1 second? And that's what we have to practice. Because if I don't practice that, when that particular second comes along, I'm not ready, right? And so I'll fail, you know? Who's ready to leave their body? Yeah? Think about, I mean, just in an easy way, because Baba also says it can happen in any instant, right? Any moment. And at that very moment, everything, all of that castle of plans and projects and connections just folds, it just disappears, dissolves. All of that reality that was so important to us, whoop, finish in a second. So that's the final exam. So am I studying? The only source of preparation is the Moli. I mean, you can read all of these Lockheed pop psychology books and stuff like that. I don't think there's too much damage in it, but don't use people who don't know God as your source of information, right? Some of the theories that are circling around are so interesting, at the same time so away from what Baba would say. I think that if those souls were in Gyan, they'd probably write about the same thing differently. If they only knew about the soul and God and how to connect up with God and how everything was going through a cyclic process and, you know, how the souls come and go from here, it gives a completely different world view even. So from that world view, we will look at the same things differently. Right? For example, if we are souls, really, it invalidates the theory of evolution, right? Because the theory of evolution doesn't even have space for the existence of a human soul, right? So a completely different worldview it gives us. So while we can appreciate the attempts of in Brazil they say that there are 200 million, that's the population of the country, there are 200 million coaches of the national football team, right? That means that every single one has an opinion of how they should play, right? In the same way, how many gurus are there in the world? Probably the whole population. People trying to teach other people things. No. So the idea that we get our sense of wealth through the Moli should be very strong. Secondly, we are getting the raw material to prepare us for the exams that happen every day and also the final exam, and we get the chance to practice those ideas in the laboratory of our lives, right? And we get a chance to discipline ourselves around jnana, so that gradually the way we see things, we don't have to make the effort to understand that a scene is a scene of a drama that's repeating. It becomes natural. We don't even have to remember it. It becomes natural. And isn't that, after all, what we're trying to do? Aren't we trying to create a life in the golden age where we don't even know these things, but we are naturally all of these things? This Baba's been teaching us and preparing us for. Is that right? So when, you know, I hear people saying the Morley is boring, or Baba's repetitive, or, you know, I always remember I was in, I don't remember which place I was in, with a bunch of BKs, and they were saying, yeah, but, you know, can't we shorten the Morley? It's so boring. I showed them, if you're really paying attention, if you're really interested in your student life, you have to be passionate about being a student. And you, these are the drills. These are the things that we have to repeat to ourselves. Why does Baba have to repeat things? Because obviously it goes in one ear and out the other, right? And the implication is that if something goes in one ear and out the other, there's nothing in between to stop it. Just... Or it goes in one ear and out your pen. So it goes in the ear and out the tip of your pen as you write into your book. We should write it here, no? Write it here. So these are, these are... So as a response to this, I showed people, I took up one Morley and I got the first third of the first page, and I showed them 15 things that they could use in their meditation practice. And for me, let me be quite honest, I don't think that we meditate properly, or we know how to meditate very well, most of us. Who would like to improve their meditation practice here? Okay. Who'd like to be successful every time they sat down and meditated, that you really took off and you're out, you know, you're beyond, you're fulfilled, you're wonderful, you know. All of us. So we should be using what we're learning to increase our experience of yoga, because that becomes central to our Brahmin life. If there's no power of yoga, then the same test will become more difficult. The same ones. If there's power of yoga, the test is nothing. If there's no power of yoga, it seems like a huge obstacle. You know. And we don't get it, actually. If we're thinking about someone's defects, for example, it means we have not understood jnana, basically. It's ignorance. It is ignorance. Because who is doing the thinking? It's the soul. The soul cannot change another soul, right? God can change us. We can't change anyone, right? So when I'm thinking that someone should be different because they've got a sort of a nasty behavior, what I really want is for the person to be different and changed. It means if I could do it, I'd change that person so that they wouldn't be so inconvenient, right? But can't do it. So it's a complete waste of time to think about other people's defects. Secondly, they will bring up our own, you know. The reason why I perceive them is because I have them, you know. It's like a language. If you don't understand, say, Hungarian, even though Hungarian is written in Roman letters, right? It's the same writing that they use in English, You can't understand a word. The letters are there, but they're arranged in a completely different way. Only Hungarians can understand Hungarian. Who understands Hungarian here? Anyone? Oh, no one. So if you're walking through the streets of Budapest, you'll see thousands of things written, shops and street signs and, you know, everything, billboards, and you won't notice it, because you don't speak that language. So can you imagine a stage in which virtues are so natural and defects are so away from you that you don't even recognize them anymore? It's not your language. So who stops speaking the language of defects? Hand up. Wow, one person. Very good, congratulations. So we use knowledge for that reason. Now, I've got these 18 points here. 18 ways to listen to the Murli. Before that though, I'd like to ask you, tell the person next to you, if there's someone near you who speaks your language, what was your point from today's Murli? Don't look at your books. It's a real test. You're in Madhavan after all, you know. What was your point today? Okay, another question. Just while you're talking about it, what's the connection between your point and the point of the other person? What's the relationship? How does one relate to the other? Immediately you'll start to think differently. What's the connection? How does one lead to the other? If you put them together, what do you get? One more minute. Okay, let's continue. Interesting. This is what fascinates me about the Murli, is that it's so self-explanatory, and one part supports the other part, one part supports the other part. But generally, and I'll share with you how I listen to the Moli today. The first way to listen to the Moli is if you've got some personal interest that you're churning. And at the moment, I've been thinking a lot and also sharing a lot about the limited ego and how. Just a week or so ago, 2 weeks ago, I gave a class on silence versus the ego. So it's a subject which is fresh in my mind. It's a personal interest at the moment. I'm trying to figure it out more deeply. I'm trying to go into it more deeply. So the first way to listen to Moli is if you have some personal interest in your churning. This, by the way, is not an order of priority, what I'm going to share. But these are like more general things. And since understanding the limited ego has been a sort of a something, and I'm going today to Kuwait, and I've got a couple of talks there about this, so I have to refine my thinking further, right? And of course the best source of information that you're going to share is the Moli itself. But you have to read between the lines, yeah. So what I heard today related to that was when Baba said, people come in front of you, they should become aware of the three worlds and their own history. I mean, if I'm going along with my own ego in front, how can I really be a mirror for them? In fact, if I'm just doing, backflips and sort of somersaults within my own ego, and thinking that I'm spiritual, then I won't be a mirror for anyone, really. This is something that, and when Baba says be a mirror for the blind, if you're a mirror, people don't see you, they see themselves, right? Isn't it? People see themselves. So how can I collapse my ego? Like, I will take that point and I'll transform it into a question because I have that personal interest about understanding deeply the ego. So I'll transform it into a question. How can I be so transparent? It's like rephrasing Baba's words in a way. How can I become so transparent? And obviously, if I'm going to give someone an experience of the three worlds, what does that mean for me? Well, I also have to be sort of a good traveller, right, between here and the subtle region and the soul world, no? Going up and down the three floors that Baba talks about. If I'm not a frequent traveller of those things, again I won't be able to give people the experience of the three worlds. And when Baba says make them aware of their own story, okay? If I'm caught up in my own little story that I was born in this moment and I'm here and I went through all of these things and this is me, how can I make someone aware of their whole story, I'm a soul. I'm not just this story of this birth. If that's at the forefront of my consciousness, this story of this birth, then how can I give a person the experience of the whole story? So just one little line like that opens a universe of possibilities of churning and going deeper. And maybe in your book you didn't even hear that point, right? Because you were paying attention to something else. Something else was interesting you, maybe. So if we all compared our notes after the Moli, they're all different, right? Because everyone has their own preferences. That's okay, no problem. But if I don't sit listening to the Morley with some specific interest, I won't hear anything. It will go in one ear, out the other. And I won't think that it's interesting. You know why it's not interesting? Because I'm not interested. That's why it's not interesting. It's not that the Morley is not interesting. I'm not interesting. That's how it is. So, second one. A practical situation. Something that's going on, right? Now, in a real time, something happening. Something maybe you are involved in and you need to help sort out somehow. Yeah? And in the last few days I've been involved in a situation where there's two souls that really don't get on with each other. There's no acceptance one of the other. And they, of course, each one blames the other person for being the terrible one, right? The lack of acceptance, but actually it's affecting service, let's say. And it's something that I have to help as part of my, work in Baba's name. So, with that in mind, okay, what's Baba going to say today about a practical situation like this? And so I'm sitting there listening, waiting, you know. If you're not looking for it, you won't see it. And the body language tells everything. But if you're sitting on the edge of your seat, sort of with your eyes sort of like that, like expectant waiting, is very different from sitting up the back of the class like this, you know. Isn't it? You can see the body language in the room. Body language is 70% of the communication, right? So you're expecting Baba to say something about a practical situation that you're going through. So what did Baba say for my practical situation? He said in the blessing, transform others with Satuguni Drishti. So the answer, right? Why should I worry that they don't get on with each other? That means I'm pretty weak if I can't help them transform. That means I have to upgrade my Drishti, right? I have to, you know, and when I see them, I'm only seeing sato qualities, you know. If I want to develop my sato pradhan state, I have to connect with whatever is sato in others and things, right? I have to connect with actually the original state of people and things. No matter is the way it is now, it's the same atoms that are making up a rubbish dump that used to make up the parks of the Golden Age. They are exactly the same atoms, by the way. There are no new atoms, right? They're the same ones. It's the same water that's always been here. There's no new water. It's the same air. There's no new air, right? It's the same matter, but it's in a different way because souls are like that, right? So if I want to connect with my sattva pradhan stage and I want to help someone else, my vision has to be very elevated. So again, if I'm looking for it, I hear it. It's in the Muli. It's the great tip from Baba. Like Baba's speaking to me. The Muli is for me, not anyone else, right? It's for me. Baba's telling me, okay, in this particular situation, child, right, you have to have Sato Pradhan Drishti, Sato Guni Drishti for these souls, and that will help them change. Okay, great. So he's given me an indication of what I should practice, and I don't need to break my head about what to do. You have that experience, right? We all have it. The third thing, the third way, if you're interested, is to look for any specific Srimad, which is sort of highlights the Muli Srimad. What is the specific Srimad for me today? From this Muli, in fact, it's something we should always look for, even if we don't have any situations. What is the specific Srimad? And for me, don't leave things to the drama. Right? Don't leave things to the drama. That means that I have to understand better the drama. What is the drama? You know? If I really understand drama, then hum so so hum is natural. Yeah? Nothing is new is natural. Every single soul has their own part that is natural. But especially this one, we don't know what our fortune is, finally. So that gives us the freedom, you know. In an absolute sense, there's no freedom of will. But in a relative sense, there is, because I don't know. What was the extent of my fortune in the last cycle? I don't know. And what was the example Baba gave about don't leave things to the drama? Even to take a drink of water, you need to make the effort. You can't sit there waiting for the glass of water to jump off the table and come into your mouth. You have to reach out, take it up to your mouth and tip it back and open your mouth and let it go down your throat. You have to do it all. This movement. So if I leave it to the drama, like leaving the cup of water on the table, okay, if it's my fortune, it'll come. If it's not, but I want it, right? I'm thirsty. I need it. So that's the third thing. Number three. The fourth thing, this is more general stuff, right? Is any special points for intoxication, for really becoming happy? That's the fourth one. And yes, there was for me. Every time I think of this, this is what actually I was saying at the beginning. Baba's directions are the highest on high. Now, what makes you intoxicated will be according to your nature and your effort and so on and so forth. The moment that you are in, maybe something different. But for me, Baba's direction are the highest on high. That means anything else is less. So that means that anything else is, okay, I'll look at it, but it's not the highest on, it's not the last opinion on the topic. You know, recently I was talking to a Chinese doctor in Peru. And I was asking him about cancer. I said, how do Chinese doctors see cancer? And he says, well, we see it as an imbalance of the qi, right? The energy of the body. And unless you correct the imbalance, you won't solve the problem. So there's an imbalance between the energy that's going through the liver and somewhere else, let's say. So unless you correct that, and it's a whole problem. And so though cancer has been on their sort of radar for the last 500 years or something, they have a completely different approach to it, even though in China they do have allopathic you know, chemotherapy and radiotherapy and stuff. But invariably he said that his patients, he's probably the most famous Chinese doctor in Peru. He said, unless the person changes the way they think, the way they eat, the way they relate to people, the causes, the deeper causes for things, if they're not sorted out, generally the tumor or whatever comes back even after the treatment. So it's not just a question of cutting out a tumor, but it's a question of changing the way whatever imbalance led to that in the first place. Obviously, that makes sense, right? In a way, a lot of what people say is very unilateral. They've been thinking about it, but they don't know God and they don't know these highest directions, so they'll have a different opinion, which we can recognize and appreciate, but they are not the highest directions. So when I think of this, I become extremely intoxicated. We have the highest directions of all. Yeah? Fifth thing. It's related to a special effort. Special effort. And my special effort lately has been more and more to try to stay, when I sit down to meditate, to go as quick as I can to the incorporeal state. So I'm interested in this special effort of becoming incorporeal. So what is Baba going to say today about incorporeal? And of course that was practically several times Baba did mention something. If I want to remember the incorporeal father, I have to become incorporeal. So he did say that. So it means that I have to work on... Baba being incorporeal and me body conscious won't work, right? There's no connection. Baba's not the father of my ego. I'm the father of my ego. So there's no connection between this limited consciousness and God, really. There isn't. Me, Mary, or Joseph, or John, and God, there's no connection. Me and all of my story, there's no connection. There's a connection between the soul. So I need to work on my end of the bargain, because Baba is already incorporeal. He doesn't need to make any effort to be incorporeal, but I do. And so further work is needed in my case. So when I'm listening to the Muli, I'm trying to, Baba is trying to make me more and more aware that this connection is only possible if I also become incorporeal. And the sixth way to listen to the Muli, you're looking for something that you need to clarify for yourself. So you need to churn deeper about it. So looking for something you need to clarify. So Baba's giving, he gives it sort of like a buffet, right? Dinner. And you can choose what you want. So what I chose, something that I really want to churn about, because what does it mean, vikaram vinash, really? Which means, and the terrible translation, I must say, I'm sorry about the translators, but we don't absolve sins. Absolving is like forgiving. The word in Hindi is vikaram vinash, means destroying sins. Sins are destroyed, not absolved. There's some problem there about this translation. I don't know how it gets into other languages, but in English, to absolve means to forgive. We're not forgiven, we destroy them. So what does it really mean? So this is my point for special churning and clarification. What do I need to do to really destroy my sins, burn them actually? Vinash is the same word that is used for destruction. So the end of the world, the end, finish, is called Vinash. So Vikaram Vinash is the end of those actions. Again, Vikaram means from the actions that separate me from truth. That's the definition of sin. Vikaram, something which separates me, that separates me from my truth or separates someone else from their truth, that's a sin. So what do I need to do to destroy the things that separate me from truth? Isn't that a little bit different from absolving sins? So it means that if they're destroyed, they don't come back, right? And let me understand also, what are sins? I need to clarify that. So when the Baba talks about this sort of thing, I really need to understand what it means. Because the next cycle they come back again, so were they destroyed? Well, what sort of destruction is it? Because also the world comes back to the way it was. The same things that were destroyed also turn up again 5,000 years later, right? So, what's there? So it means they become disactivated. They become inactive. They've been turned off. Turn off switch. They've been turned off. But obviously, if you've turned off something, it's because you've turned on something else, right? So what have I turned on to make sure that they don't come back? So, well, there's a lot of churning in that. You know, you could sit there for an hour or so just thinking about and going to the depths of that particular thing. What is destroying sins all about? So, they're the six things in general, right? Now, I've loosely sort of classified things according to the four subjects. Gyan, let's take it in the order that Baba talks about it. The other day I was with the NCCC retreat in the evening. And I shared the fact that for many years we were working on, I think, trying to get some document that showed that we were associated with each other internationally. Because until then, the only things that showed that we were associated were our folders and our printed material. Brahma Kumari is printed in Russian or in Chinese or in French. So, but there wasn't any sort of an official document saying that Brahma Kumari is, you probably didn't realize this, Brahma Kumari was never an international organization. And it is not an international organization even today. It's an association of national organizations. Got it? So that we figured out the only thing that we have in common is Srimad. And how is Srimad? Srimad is the four subjects: Gyan, Yoga, Dharana, Seva. So we're a network of country organizations. We are a network. So it's not really an organization, it's a network. So if the only thing we have in common is Srimad, which is defined as the four subjects, it's better that I really understand those four pillars, right? So it's always a good way. Okay, if you're going to divide them all into Gyan Yoga Seva Dharma, many people do that anyway. But what exactly? And so there are a few things that I entertain myself with. These are 18 points that I develop for me, right? And I'm sharing them with you. It's not written in stone. You know what I mean? These are just some suggestions. But it's been useful for me. So in within Gyan, the eighth way to listen to the Muli is what are some of the basic points. And Gyan normally is connected with the cycle in some way, or it's connected with the things that people don't understand very well. It's connected with clarifying things like omnipresence or giving details about the soul and the soul world and the three worlds and the way the cycle turns and Lakshmi and Narayan and all of these things of bhakti, right? That Baba obviously is teaching people who have that context. It's not the context that we have in the West. I mean, Lakshmi Narayan, so what, you know, for the context that we live in, doesn't make any, you know, doesn't attract any attention except curiosity maybe. But then we understand how the deities were, yes, we can really appreciate that. So one basic point that I thought that I would like to think about and work on is the thing of the karma sannyas, the renunciation of karma, how impossible it is. Now, why is it impossible? What's there that makes it impossible? It's because we're doing things and getting the return from it. Even if you sit down and you're doing nothing, you're actually not doing nothing. You are doing something. You're sitting down and doing nothing, right? You're doing it. So you have to eat, you have to walk, you have to go, you have to, you know, something is there. So that means, okay, if you're going to renounce action, but what do you renounce within the action? You renounce the impurities, you renounce the, you know, the heaviness. Detachment, for example, is connected with renunciation. You can't get detached, you can't renounce. And basically we have to detach from three things. It's not just possessions and relationships, that's one area of attachment. The other one is to be attached to your own actions. It means you're doing something, and it seems so natural that you're doing something, you're wanting the result, right? But then you suffer when the result doesn't happen. So you're not detached from your actions if they're suffering from them. So this whole thing of renunciation and action, what does it mean? What do we actually renounce? What do we actually detach from? The third area of detachment is related to the senses. You know? I was with a group yesterday and they were, you know, sweetly complaining about Raj Rishi Bhavan. And I just remembered when we first came along here in the 70s, 1975 was when I first came on, there wasn't any beds even. We slept on the floor, just on a piece of sponge, right on the floor. We had 30 or so to a room. I don't know about the sisters, but the brothers had that. And there was no hot water. No hot water. You had to go out in the freezing cold and fill up an aluminium bucket at a sort of a place where they were heating up the water with coals or firewood, right? So you're walking across there with a bucket and a freezing and a 4 below 0, filling up your bucket, then you have a, you know, we... There were no tables. We did it. We sat on the floor to eat. We sat on the floor. They had sort of strips of carpet and people sitting on both sides of them. The plates were in front of each one. They were all sitting nicely, very beautifully. And someone would come around with a bucket and serve you on your plate. So when I started to say these things, they started to complain a little bit less, right? You know, can't do much about the snorers, but at least, you know, if you're in a room with a lot of people, just be a little bit sensitive. Don't get up at 2 a.m. and have a shower, you know, or a bath. Don't do it. You'll get all sorts of bad wishes. And try to control your snoring as well. Yeah. So, but that means if you're suffering, it's because you're attached to comfort, to nice things, to soft things, to sweet things, to, you know, melodious things, right? That's also attachment, isn't it? And what is renunciation without detachment? It doesn't exist. Renunciation doesn't mean walking away from it. It means that it doesn't affect you anymore. So, it's a lot there. The ninth point, we're still going, still a few more points. The metaphors that Bubba uses, if you're a little bit poetically inclined, the metaphors are really marvellous. And of course the one today was about alloys mixed in the soul, right? I liked Gentiben's comment. I was in Pandabhavan for the Muli this morning. She was reading the Muli there, and she said, alloys, you don't only need to heat up to get the alloys out, but the alloys got mixed in also by heat in the first place. You know, how do all of these, like granite is formed, you know, all of these rocks around here are sort of granite. But then you see all sorts of things within it, all sorts of crystals. So there must have been some molten state at one stage, and then it sort of became more mixed. So all of the metals that are found in nature, generally they're mixed, and they were mixed because of heat. There was some volcanic activity, right? And you know, that was probably the destruction at the last time around. That's what made the rocks. So the alloys are formed by heat, and the alloys are also removed by heat. So which heat? Which fire? Fire of lust and the fire of yoga. Yeah? So that metaphor, you can think about it. You can write a poem about it, you know. Why not? It's a lovely image. And just one word, it explains a whole lot of things. We're not shiny anymore because there are alloys mixed in us. Yeah? And the tenth point, the stories. Today's story was about the Pandavas going to the mountains, right? At the end, with their little dog, right? And Baba says there was no annihilation because they believed that they sort of, like those old Western movies, the heroes are sort of riding off into the sunset. So at the end of everything, the 5 Pandavas are climbing up the mountains and sort of, you know, the scene fades and the end comes on at the end of the picture, right? Riding off into the sunset. But, so, you know, they got it wrong. Bubba uses these stories. Okay, the stories are very interesting, but they got it wrong. And if there's a story in the Muli that you don't understand, Google is there, you know. You can find out. In fact, a lot of these stories, in any tradition, there are 3 or 4 versions of the same story, right? So don't get too stuck on a particular version. And even some of the stories are mythical, You know, like Baba said the other day, eat halva if your mother dies. And people think that that's a custom in India. No, it's not a custom. What happened was Baba was in Delhi once, and there was one sister left the body, and there was a funeral, and they all got back. There was, you know, it was very late, and Baba said, make halva. That's the easiest thing to do. So it's not like it's a tradition here. There's a story about something that happened, you know. So as much as you understand the stories, everything becomes more enjoyable. Yeah. Yoga, the 11th point, for me is how to strengthen my connection with Baba. That will always be there when I'm listening to the Mauli. And for me, the point that answered that particular expectation was, don't just remember Baba, but remember your inheritance as well. Don't just remember Baba, remember your inheritance. It gives another dimension to the same experience. Don't remember Baba, remember your inheritance as well. So I thought, yeah, that makes sense. What am I getting? What am I earning? Again, it goes back to the other point about earning the income. The ninth way, of course, these are also all of these things, in fact, are subjects you could also take up with Bapdada in the heart-to-heart conversation. But especially this 12th point, which is about Baba's titles. What were Baba's titles? Today, God of the Gita, the Purifier, the Bestower of Salvation, a few others, but I wanted to focus on God of the Gita, the Purifier, and the Bestower of Salvation. So, let's say I want to have a heart-to-heart conversation with Baba Namrit Vela tomorrow. What does it mean, really, to bestow salvation? What is salvation? In Hindi, it's sadgati. It means basically a state of truth. So salvation means a state of truth. You are saved if you go back to a state of truth. Baba gives me a state of truth. So what does that mean? So looking for the meaning behind these titles is very entertaining. And then my titles, what Baba says, we are often, he says, you are the light of my eyes, you are my helpers, you are this, you are that. There wasn't too much today, but I took up the thing of being an ex-deity, right? I am the worshipper who became worship-worthy. And what does worship-worthy mean? What's the difference? What's the distance between a worshipper and a worship-worthy? How much worship still is in me? How much bhakti is still there? You know, how much recognition of Baba is really there at the forefront of my consciousness. And I don't get caught up in all of these unnecessary details. Yeah. If I put someone above me who is another human being, it's called bhakti. If I put Baba above me and I'm the child, it's not bhakti, it's recognition. So there's a big difference between recognition and bhakti, devotion. Again, I have to be devoted to Baba's cause. So there is aspects of devotion, yeah? But I have to become what I used to worship, basically. How far am I along that road? Am I getting there? Is it still a very far away or is it close? Can I, as Baba sometimes says, can I see the treetops of heaven? You know, like the ships coming in and land ahoy, you know. It's just out there in front of me. I can see golden age sort of forming in front of me. Or is it really very distant? Yeah, what do you think? Far, close, more or less? What do you think? Okay, so that's the 13th point. The 14th point, and these are dharana points now, behavior. What does Baba want my behavior to be? This is the 14th thing to look for in the Mali. How does Baba want me to behave? And the point that I took out from the Mali was, how do I explain to others in a way? And Baba says you have to emphasize their mistakes. So they've got everything wrong. They've got everything twisted or inverted, right? Like specifically he was talking about God is not omnipresent, Krishna is not God, things like that. So these were the mistakes. But how much tact and how much love and sort of inclusiveness and understanding do I have to explain to someone that he's wrong in the way that he thinks? I mean, you don't want to do it just like that. It won't work. You have to induce the person to understand. You have to guide them in a way. This morning I was talking to a brother about how we give the course, and actually there are three things that happen in what's called didactics, which is the mechanisms of teaching. Didactics, there are three things that happen. One is induction, where you induce, you help people, you are sweet and you're appealing and full of dharana, and you lead people to understand something. That's called induction. There's also deduction, where they deduce, they figure out. So in this way you're actually presenting things very logically, and they can easily come to a conclusion. So you're being logical, you're being, you know, thoughtful, and you're helping them come to conclusion. So the first one is like you get them to say without you saying it. You get them to say something without you saying it. You have to be sweet and loving and kind. And then the deduction is you have to be logical and clear. And the third one is conduction, which means when you conduct something, you are actually you hold the space. You are the authority of experience in the room. Generally, we try to be the last one and we don't think of the first two. Yeah? Or maybe think of the second one. But in fact, we should be the first one more than anything. We should be helping through our sweetness and dharana people to understand their mistakes, what they've mistakenly believed, right? It's not a mistake like, you know, you forget something. It's a mistake of a belief. You thought that God was omnipresent, and it's not true, my friend. So what sort of dharana, what sort of behavior you have to help someone understand that what he used to believe is, you know, a little bit off track. So that's the point I got there for my own behavior. The 15th point is the example of Brahma Baba. So sometimes, and I, you know, he said Brahma Baba was a senior mama, right? And also sometimes, you know, I'm not constant. I, you know, he's showing his humility. Sometimes I can't remember Baba all the time. Even though he's here in me, I can't remember him all the time. So he's being very honest and straightforward, humble. So it sort of shines out, doesn't it, an example like that. So the example of Brahma Baba is always in something there, is always in the Muli. If you want to be Bap Saman, it's probably a good thing to look for. The 16th way, points of caution or attention. And today the point was, don't get trapped in the name and form of others. don't get trapped in the name and form of others. Obvious reasons, yeah? Because you can't move forward with someone else. If someone else is blocking your mind or figuring in your mind, you can't move forward. It's a false support, yeah? It will let you down at some point or the other. So, not worth going there. But Bubba's are warning us, don't get trapped in the name and the form of other people. So, the seva, I've got 2 points here just to round it off. For me, again, I'm saying this is the way I sort of try to get the most out of the Morley. I look for ideas for service. And in this case, today's point was explain how God comes. Just a small order, right? Explain how God comes. How God takes. He was talking about the divine birth. How does God take birth? What really happens? Can I actually explain that? Or do I sort of skip around that? Because if I had a better explanation, I'd probably use it. So, am I good at explaining how God comes? Or when I try to explain that, people sort of run the other way, right? So, I have to work out, you know, maybe it's an article, maybe because I like to write a lot. So, how does God come? And the last way, the 18th way of listening to the Muli, is if there's some special project happening, like some special training going on or something that you're planning to do, a program, a campaign, or whatever, or even a personal thing, something collective or something personal. In my case, I'm fine-tuning a book. It's not been easy to write a book on the cycle. I had written many years ago, it was the first book actually, called New Beginnings. I wrote it sort of in 1982. And I've written lots of books in Portuguese or in Spanish, but not so many in English. And they were wanting this book to be published as a sequel to another one called Pathways, which I wrote, like a volume 2. And then they looked at it, the publishing house, and said, no, we would like a standalone book. That's a different order, you know. You want a book to stand on its own feet, not connected with any other one. You have to, actually I had to rewrite it. And now I'm in the stage of fine-tuning it. So basically, the way that I've done it is very well documented. But I've talked about how evolution, what evolutionists think, what creationists think, what they think about each other, because they hate each other. But I'm just being like a journalist. Well, they think this about them and they think this about them, but I'm not getting into the argument. And then I offer, you know, this is a third way of looking at the same things. That's basically the argument. So I'm on the lookout for ideas related to cycle, right? That's my special project. And what I could see, and this is again reading between the lines, Baba didn't actually see this, but it implies this is also you can do. You can read between the lines of the Morley. You can see the inferences and the implications. Why not? So, what I took from today's Morley, something, how to associate eternity with karmic return. What actually makes the cycle a cycle is because there's always has to be a return. So even the golden age is a reward, right? So it's also a return from the actions done in the confluence age, right? So how does eternity and karmic return work together? So that's what was in that jumped out of the pages of today's Mauli. And I'm going to think about it. Maybe add a chapter or something. I don't know. Or add a part of a chapter, maybe. But anyway, that's how I appreciate the Mauli, and that's how I appreciated today's Mauli. Okay?